All right, welcome to a new episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, I know we've been jumping back and forth between new movies and older movies with our Missing Pieces series, but this is a new one. It actually came out a couple weeks ago on Netflix. It's called The Platform. It's a very crazy metaphor for capitalism dressed up in a genre horror sci-fi kind of film. And I'm glad that our guest for the episode, David Quiñones, my buddy Q from Bird Road, from here in All Points West, he brought this movie to my attention because I probably would have never seen it otherwise. And I really actually enjoyed it. I talk a lot of shit about Netflix, but this is a good one. This is a very good one. You should definitely watch it before we get into this conversation if you haven't yet. You should also make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You should rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser. You should follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. There, I just ran through all that real quick. You should also check out Bird Road while you're at it because we got a new episode up and I think you'll enjoy it. It's a fun one, especially if you enjoy this that we're about to do right here. Let me just say before we get into this conversation, Q was in rare form, and it's a little bit all over the place, but it was definitely a lot of fun to do. I hope you enjoy it. And so we're going to talk about The Platform, and what can I say? Lots of new Piecing It Together coming your way aside from this one. We're recording left and right. We've done about 5 episodes in the last like 6 days. I mean, we've got a lot recorded, a lot coming your way. So thank you, everybody who's out there listening. Right now, let's talk about The Platform. Well, joining me today is David Quiñones.
About that, you like that?
And we're going to talk about this movie called The Platform that you told me I should watch. I actually hadn't even heard of it. As
you never would have in a million years watched this without me.
Well, let's be honest. We're in the middle of a
different
weird
times.
Time for movies. And
can I ask, is this the first Pitt that will come out that will acknowledge like the effects of coronavirus and all of us living in our house, or have you had one already that's hit the feed?
There's and, been
I'm gonna take a hit and listen to my answer offline.
So
thank you.
That kind of episode, I see. Well, we have started this new series, Missing Pieces, so that did acknowledge what's going on. But this will be the first main new episode, new movie.
I like the idea of having a show called Bitching Pieces.
Bitching Pieces is also another one we're gonna start. But what I was gonna say if I may, is
barbed wire.
Netflix is just pumping them out one after another, and generally speaking, there's no quality control. It's just let's just fill your screen up with as many pieces of content as possible.
Fair. But so, Dave, can I give you a little bit of guidance though?
Sure.
And it's pertinent to what we're about to talk about.
Yes.
And I'm just gonna give you, as somebody who consumes a lot of that sort of tripe that you look down your nose at.
Yes.
If you ever want like quick shorthand on how to like spot a good one, if it's in Spanish, it's probably really good.
That's probably like, a really almost, good recommendation.
Yeah. Like if it's in, I'm not just, you know, being, you know, preferential towards my people or anything like that, but like all of the Spanish language offerings that Netflix puts together on the TV and the movie side, they just end up being really good, in my opinion, and we'll reserve our judgment on this film until the end. But like, I think that that's a rule that people could probably follow.
Sure. Well, I will just say right now,
if it has Mark Wahlberg, it's bad. Yeah. If it's in Spanish, it's good.
That is a very good way to judge things. But one weird thing about the way I watched this movie, I want to get out of the way before we start getting into some puzzle pieces of this movie called The Platform.
We don't want to know that you were naked.
I was.
It's fine.
I was fully clothed while watching it. But tell me if it did this for you. It defaulted to English. Do you have any issue with this? I saw on Twitter today, I'm not the only one. I pushed play and the movie was in English, but I noticed the lips weren't matching up. And I noticed that because I usually watch movies with subtitles anyway, just because. And I noticed the subtitles were like a different translation. It wasn't quite right. And then I went to settings and it had automatically chosen an English dub instead of the Spanish language. And I saw on Twitter today, I'm not the only one. They're doing this to a lot of people.
Okay, yeah. It's not them doing it, Dave.
Oh,
it's
they're doing
it. It's well, okay, yeah. No, I mean, like, you're right. It is them doing it in that they own the platform, but it's your choices. I've noticed this from trying to raise, and a quick plug for, as I'm drunk and high on a movie podcast, a quick plug for Entre Dos podcast.
For any kids
also a member of All Points West, as somebody who is working really hard to raise a bilingual daughter and exploring the language options on all the streaming platforms all the time and vetting them too, listening, because sometimes they suck and you would rather your kid not listen to the Spanish version because it actually is bad Spanish or poorly done, right? Mm. But by the way, I will say that the best platform out there for that stuff, Disney Plus. Disney Plus is so good at, like, they really transcreate. They don't just translate. They, like, actually make content. They rewrite the content.
Interesting.
But to your point, what you're experiencing is a result of your own, it's algorithmically designed, resulting from your own behavior.
Well, like what you do. You're sitting here making a big assumption about me that I don't just randomly watch movies in Spanish for no good reason.
No. I'm not making that assumption about you. What I'm saying, what language did you watch Roma in?
I watched Roma in the language of cinema because I went and saw it in the theater.
Okay, what did they play? How did they do it?
It was in Spanish with subtitles. Yeah.
In Spanish with subtitles, yeah. Okay. Okay, so my point is that on the streaming platforms, and don't act all smug because you saw you were one of the 30 people that got to see Roma in theaters.
Well,
like,
nobody
got to see Roma in theaters.
I'm clearly better than most people. So
yeah, I will tell. I'm not making any base judgments about you. What I'm telling you is my own experience as a parent trying to raise a bilingual kid and exploring language options on the different streaming platforms. What I've found is, it makes that judgment for you. It makes the judgment. It's whatever hundreds, thousands of hours of television and movies that you've watched on Netflix over the course of the years, that data is informing their decision to serve that up to you in English and not in Spanish. And I can tell you that because it served it up to me in Spanish.
I guess there's going to be a lot of that where it's, you know, with the algorithms and all that stuff, it's going to figure things like that out and decide what you're going to see. That actually brings me to one more question that I wanted to ask you before we get into some puzzle pieces. Was this a movie that was on your radar before it hit your Netflix feed? Or was it something you were just like, oh, that looks interesting?
Piecing it together and Bird Road Listener and my colleague, Sam Rodriguez, props out to Sam, creative director at my agency where I work.
Mm-hmm.
He put it on my radar and he was so adamant about it. And we're living in these weird times where, like, we all have this, like, buffer. Even parents, we have this buffer of, like, bandwidth. It's not like we don't have more time living under this, you know, COVID-19 situation. It's like we don't have more time. It's just that everything is fluffier and begs to be filled in. And I had like an hour and a half that begged to be filled in, and based on Sam Rodriguez's vehement recommendation, I popped it on and was hooked immediately.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about it.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought it to my attention. I probably would have skipped it, but yeah, I'm glad to be talking about it, and this is going to...
It is out there in the zeitgeist a little bit.
It is.
I think people are talking about it on social.
It is.
It's not like one of those ones that you were talking about that just kind of comes and goes, and it's just like, oh, just some other trash movie or whatever.
No, this is definitely top-tier Netflix. Yeah, this is... I mean, it may have, like, showed up out of the blue, but it's definitely captured some attention. But I'd say, why don't we jump right in? Cause this is a weird movie and, you know, we'll have plenty to talk about. Why don't you go with your first puzzle piece?
So I'm going to go with my first one, and I think I'm going to be stealing one from you probably if I had to bet.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if I do or don't. My first puzzle piece is 2013's Snowpiercer, which of course was directed by Bong Joon-ho, starring Chris Evans, Tilda Swinton, Kang Ho Song, who we've all gotten to know in the last year, along with Bong Joon-ho, who we've all gotten to know in the last year from Human Boy, Parasite. So Snowpiercer was an English language movie, mostly English language, although I think there was some Korean spoken by some of the characters, that focused on a level-based near-future dystopia, right, where underclasses were subject to scorn and subject to oppression and subjugation from lower classes were subject to those things from upper classes, right? From the upper class.
Sure.
And it was this unapproachable, unassailable, broken, not broken. Actually, it was working perfectly, working exactly the way that it should. System.
Exactly.
That, yeah. And what our story was in both of these movies was getting to watch characters to varying degrees of success. Actually, no, let me take that back. To pretty much the same degree of success. Challenge those structures and take them on and try to defeat them and incur huge losses along the way. And ultimately, I also think that they both share these movies, probably the same weak point, which is the ambiguity of the ending and not really knowing like, okay, so then what? All of a sudden, this is just like an art film that, like, you know, like a student art film for the last 10 minutes. I don't get it. But that, you know, we can talk about that later. But yeah, so Snowpiercer, which I don't know if you ever saw that, Dave. I really like that movie.
I finally watched it last year, and I know that movie gets so much praise. I didn't like it that much. I like this a lot more than Snowpiercer, but it's definitely, the comparison is like right there. It's a vertical version of Snowpiercer, basically.
Right, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's a perfect first puzzle piece it would to kick this off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, but yeah, no, I think that's definitely the first thing I think either of us would have to bring up because it's such a clear comparison there and just fits so well. And it is a beloved movie. I mean, I don't know why it just didn't really work that well for me. I enjoyed the central metaphor of it. I thought it was pretty clever. I just didn't find the actual plot that went
well. You know what my theory is too, because I also don't think Snowpiercer was like an incredible movie the way that it's portrayed to be. Mm-hmm. It was a really, really good movie. I thought it was a very good movie.
Right.
But I think that Snowpiercer was the last movie that Bong Joon-ho, who was very deep into his career at that point in 2013, it was his last movie where people who were like film nerds were going to get to have him all to themselves.
Mm.
And they thought like, oh, he's going to go mainstream and big. After this movie, it's English language. It has a U.S., an American English-speaking leading man, a big star in it. Okay, Bong Joon-ho is about to go super commercial. So, like, let's all be in on the fact that we were in on him in day one.
Right.
Like, we've always known about him. And so it got a lot of that critical acclaim and, you know, film Twitter love and shit like that from people kind of just saying, like, oh, yeah, yeah, we've known about Bong Joon-ho forever. And
yeah.
But what's funny is he didn't really hit until just last year.
Right. Yeah. No.
Because this movie missed the mark a little bit. Like, I think it got good attention, like you say, but it didn't really like take over, or it wasn't a huge touchstone or anything like that for the film in 2013.
And I wonder, before I move on to my first piece, I wonder how much of this release was planned. You know, if they were just waiting on a moment and then, oh shit, this whole COVID thing hits and everybody is buying up toilet paper and, you know, not leaving any over for anybody. And they're like, okay, time, let's release this thing. Or if this was on the books for months and months and it just wasn't on our radar, but it was already scheduled.
That's a whole other conversation that we could have one day adjacent to, you know,
that's a Bird Road film conversation.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. It's more of a culture conversation where it's like the dexterity that platforms have, like Netflix versus a studio. Imagine all the different, it'd be like trying to turn the Titanic around.
Right.
Or trying to imagine like if you're a studio, all the mountains you have to move to just be like, oh, we've got this movie ready, we're going to drop it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's implausible. I mean, during a non-COVID time when there's movie theaters involved and, you know,
that's like what South Park used to do. With the whole, like,
yeah,
2-week
turnaround. Yeah, 24-hour turnaround, or 36-hour,
yeah, 36-hour turnaround. I think it was, yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. All right, well, I'll jump into my next piece, which is the movie Saw from Lee Whannell, who just had a big hit with the Invisible Man remake. But Saw, this movie, so not to get totally in and just go beat for beat about what the story is, but basically these people they wake up in this prison-like situation where there's a there's 333 levels and two prisoners per level, and every 30 days they get switched. They fall asleep, I guess, and are drugged, I'm guessing, and taken to another level where they live at a different, basically, as a metaphor, they're on like a different level of society. They get different, you know,
Dave.
Uh-oh, here we go.
It's like capitalism, man. They're talking about capitalism.
There you go. So anyway, basically, it's a lot like Saw over and over again, happening every 30 days. You wake up in this room with another person. You have no fucking clue what's happening. And you have to kind of piece together what's going on and what the scenario is, what the danger is, and how the hell you're going to get out of that situation. And there's some really interesting twists and turns with the different cellmates he ends up having along the way. The main character, his name... Goreng. Okay, yeah, the main character Goreng. But yeah, just some interesting little matchups he's with, and each one provides for some really different kind of story elements. But yeah, I mean, just that kind of.
Yeah,
Saw
I think like
situation.
At the end of it, it's like the platform was the friends that you made along the way.
There you go, and I think that really makes a lot of sense when you put it that way.
I don't know. Is there a term of art in film for trapped in one place, single location type?
Yeah, single location film, basically. Yeah, but this is okay. Multiple single locations, because each floor kind of brings with it its own set of challenges and its own surroundings, whether the people above and the people below and all that.
Let me ask you, have you given thought to probably one of the most impressive things about this movie is that it made it look like you really did feel like it was an enormous, expansive labyrinth that you were in, but they probably just had that one room.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, like, they probably just constructed a soundstage of that one room.
Yeah.
And you felt like you were in this enormous building. They probably only had two sets. They had maybe three. They only had three setups when you think about it. That interview office-y area, mm-hmm. right? The room, which 99% of the movie happens
in,
and then
area.
The kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's incredible. That's like really innovative filmmaking. That's a movie that looked like it was like a $70 million movie that probably was really only like $25 million.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, it seems like when you go out of the country, out of the United States, you get some really inventive filmmakers who can do a lot with very little.
So you know what? I'm going to do my single scene selection that I have.
Sure.
And that is, and it's a little bit offbeat, or not offbeat, but off topic, I should say. But it is 2002's Phone Booth, directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Colin Farrell, Kiefer Sutherland, Forest Whitaker. Beyond just the immediate surface level, like, oh, it all happens pretty much in one place with a couple of other establishing shots or contextual shots that are from, you know, places elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, it mostly just happens in that one spot. What really reminded me of Phone Booth, which is a much more harried sort of Tony Scott, Joel Schumacher style, crazy madcap type movie than this is. So tonally, it's very different. But at its core, you have a character who is a bit overconfident, who thinks he knows what he's gotten himself into, and is slowly over the course of the movie taken apart, like piece by piece.
Yeah.
And he spends the inertness of his motion, the fact that it feels like Colin Farrell's character goes all over the map during that movie, but he really doesn't move more than 10 feet in any direction from where he is, right? And he becomes such a different character by the end of the movie. He's something completely transformed. He is completely disillusioned. He's ruined. And he is changed in a really fundamental way. Like there's no, you know, going back to what he was before that. And that's why it reminded me a lot of Phone Booth, a movie that, again, I think this is maybe the 10th or 11th one of these that I've dropped during my guest appearances on this show. Another Saw It Next to Jewish Dave.
That's true. Movie theater. That might be one of the earliest movies we went to see, I think.
No, we had already been going for years to movies by then. That was 2002. We started going to movies in like 99 together.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
At least in groups. Yeah. We were going in groups in 99, and then we didn't hang out with people anymore, and we would just go together.
So it might have been one of our first solo dates. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Perhaps.
I like it.
No, I think Jay and Silent Bob was our first solo date.
Oh, nice. That's a good
one. Which was like 2000, maybe. I don't know.
That's a good one. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead with another piece. Now, sometimes I will bring up a piece that's maybe a little too recent to truly have been an influence on a movie, but it's still, it still reminded me of it quite a bit. And that is last year's The Lighthouse.
Okay.
But seeing, especially in...
I think as long as this podcast is going, there's going to be like at least a monthly reference to Lighthouse.
I think there should be very, very well. I think that's why that movie exists. But yeah, I think especially with the final sequence where they're starting to travel down throughout the platform as it's going down and like interacting with all kinds of people, especially that, but also with the first dude as well, who really they're just like going crazy on each other. That there's a lot of two people trapped in a place and they're just kind of losing their minds, you know, because of the situation that they found themselves stuck in, because of the hopelessness of it, and because of you know, just the scenario that they're really in, that they're all just like very much losing their shit constantly. And there's a lot of that to this. And, you know, I like a movie where people are going a little crazy along the way. And so that's why I think this really worked pretty well for me.
Yeah, I think the analog is more there, like just the first act.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right. The first act the most, more than anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that. What do you got next?
So my next is 2004's The Machinist, which was directed by Brad Anderson and famously starring a vastly diminished Christian Bale and Jennifer Jason Leigh, where he plays the titular machinist, and being Christian Bale, who has been afflicted by just a... I don't know. Did they ever figure out if it's like a disease or like what, or if it's just him? Like, I don't remember the end of the.
That's a movie that you really, unless you've seen it recently, I think
is
you
it
mostly
just depression.
Yeah, that's what I always thought it was. Depression is what it's kind of stuck in my mind, but I haven't seen it since it first came out. It's hard to remember.
So there was a movement like right there. I think I could almost pinpoint it to like 2003, 2004, a certain type of gritty. David Fincher-ish kind of like a second generation David Fincher. In this case, it was Brad Anderson. I'm also thinking of the movie The Woodsman, which you and I went and saw, I think the same year in 2004. That had the plot of The Machinist is completely, you know, extraneous. Like it has nothing to do with the platform. What I'm thinking of is purely aesthetic. It's just the way that the movie looked, the way that it felt, the way that Brad Anderson was able to sort of put this tension behind every scene, and the way that he would play with short and long shots, and the way that really the film was shot, again, aesthetics.
Yeah.
And the feelings that the aesthetics and the cinematography would pull out. I love that, man. It reminds me, again, I say like Dime Store David Finch, but Dime Store David Finch is like pretty good. Like if you're Dime Store David Finch, you're making something pretty fucking good. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and I think that is
David Fincher. I don't know why I'm saying
David Fincher. Yeah.
Sorry, film nerds. I'm so sorry. I've had four beers and I had sex 6 years ago and have a kid. Apologies. I'll write a blog post about what a vagina feels like. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm smoking weed in a state where we're not sure if it's legal.
This is the effects of COVID-19.
Oh yeah, people want to talk about like being on a ventilator and intubated and dying and stuff like that. No, I'm the victim.
Me.
It's about me.
Oh, speaking of me, I'm going to go with another puzzle piece. How about that?
2001's me.
So this is one, much like your last piece, which I haven't seen in forever. This is one that I haven't seen in forever. I'm not sure. There's three of these movies. I'm pretty sure I only ever saw the first one, which is 1997's Cube.
Oh, I've heard of this. I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since back when it came out, but I do remember that these people, they awaken in these like these small rooms and they have to figure out, you know, what the situation is and, you know, how they're going to get out. And I believe they had to like, you know, like come up with plans together and stuff like that to you know, really make the most of the situation. And so, like I said, it's a little fuzzy. It's been since way back. I think I saw it in the theater and that was the last time, but it definitely that the whole setup, the whole scenario of just waking up over and over again in these rooms and just trying to figure out your surroundings, figure out who these people are that you're now being paired up with and figure out how you're going to survive from there. It definitely made me think of it.
Was it good? Do you remember? Like, was it a good movie? Or
that's a really good question. I think I liked it. Was at it
like
the time.
Event Horizon-y, like '90s?
Event
kind
Horizon
of
is a fucking scary ass movie. Cube, I don't
no,
remember.
I mean,
we
all agree that Event Horizon is a classic. Like, but I'm saying like, was it Event Horizon-y or maybe like Sneakers or something like that? Or
I remember like, it being an early kind of blow your mind kind of movie. Like, whoa, like that's fucking crazy, you know, like really okay. Cool, interesting, smart sci-fi, you know. So
that's funny. One day we got to talk about like movies that were the movie before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like what was the Christian Bale movie that was The Matrix? It came out like 2 years earlier
Equilibrium.
Than The Matrix. Equilibrium, yeah. And it was just like, okay, well, this is The Matrix. And it's like, well, no, here's The Matrix. Yeah. And The Matrix was 25 million times more popular and successful.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
All right, what do you got next?
Okay, so next up, this is my last piece. Okay. This has probably been used before on your... on the show, this might have been used before in a show that we've done together, but by you instead of me.
Mm.
1988's They Live, directed by John Carpenter, famously starring Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Hell yeah.
And Keith David, Meg Foster. And I picked this movie because there are movies that are subtle digs, and there's entertainment that is that are subtle digs at capitalism. And subtle digs at authoritarianism and at, you know, the American system, the American way of life.
Mm.
But this is one of the more on the nose, but at the same time, very satisfying depictions,
right,
or criticisms, really, of, you know, a sort of hyper-capitalist dystopia, near future where we are commodified in brutal ways. We're under, you know, repressive, control,
mm-hmm,
from an unseen force. So, if you watch They Live and then this, the platform as a double feature, they don't look or feel or sound anything alike.
Sure.
But they do have that similarity. And I would venture to guess that the creative team behind the platform is probably have seen John Carpenter's They Live.
Yeah, I think it was Sorry to
Which
Bother
You. Which we all have. It's a great movie. It's a huge movie. I mean, it's one that's a little forgotten to time, except by film Twitter and film nerds, but like, it's really good.
Yeah, it was Sorry to Bother You that we did together that we brought up They Live on. And yeah, I mean, any
sure,
kind of movie that's gonna take on capitalism has gotta, they have to love They Live, you know?
Yeah, but no, not necessarily though, Dave. Like, I feel like there are movies that are way more subtle,
sure,
about the critique of capitalism, that are way more the J-Lo movie from last year was,
sure,
a powerful, maybe one of the more effective critiques of the capitalist system that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And it was way understated and so nuanced that, I mean, like, you walked away feeling like, damn, this system that we live in fucking sucks and it's shitty to people and it fucks over the people at the bottom really hard, but you never felt like it was preaching it to you.
Joker would be another good one like that.
Moving along. Is there a rule against using bad movies as a puzzle piece?
Hey, I like Joker, so I'm but it's not that. So So I got two more pieces. So I was almost not going to bring this up, but I felt like I had a really good comparison to make, so I'm going to, and that is Darren Aronofsky's Mother. I wasn't going to bring it up because, yes, I do bring it up a lot, but I felt like I had to because there's a very specific thing that happens in Mother that I don't really see in many other movies. Maybe you'll call out one right away as soon as I bring this up, but it happens in this movie as well, and that is off-screen people shouting awful, awful things. As we're going through, going down the platform and getting into the lower levels and people who have really gotten the shit end of society's stick and getting the worst of the worst, hand-me-downs with the food and everything, you've got some people just screaming obscenities and just, there's people, well, and then there's people above them, like shitting on each other. Like there's just some of the most awful shit being thrown and yelled all over the place, and a lot of it is from off camera people, a lot of it is people you just catch a quick glimpse of, and that just reminded me a lot of the way in Mother is just lots of just awfulness just going around at every level, you know. I don't know, do you have another version of that I could have brought up,
like Mother? Yeah, the awfulness, that's the I'm trying to think of the directors that do that, who like have shit come from off camera, and I feel like that's almost a what movie had that was Boogie Nights. Didn't Boogie Nights have some of that?
You know, it might,
like,
where have.
you would just hear like Philip Seymour Hoffman's voice from off camera just saying something that was horrible, and right, it's like, oh my god,
yeah,
the poor guy.
That's that look, Altman thing of having people talking all over the place.
Yeah, that like cinema verite type, you know, right. Shit. So let's wash that pick out of our mouth with something that tastes even worse.
Okay, yeah, because this one is actually ridiculous. My last,
I've got one.
That's, oh, you ridiculous. Do have one more. Okay, you do.
Yeah, I just threw one together. That good. I've never seen this movie. I think that it works based on. This is one of those movies where they pushed it so hard when it came out. That and put so many commercials out there about it, and like it's been kind of a joke ever since then. It was a failure and it was a bad movie, but 2010's Repo Men, starring I think Jude Law was in it and Forest Whitaker.
This was a remake, right, of an older one, or was that a new movie?
The Repo Men of 2010 mm-hmm. is not a remake of the Repo Men that you're thinking of.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Repo Men with what's his name, Emilio, that was Repo Man.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah,
great movie, by the way.
Yeah,
Repo Man, which was from like 83 or 84. Sounds or something about like right. That
yeah,
yeah, great fucking movie. That's an awesome movie. I'm talking about 2010's Repo Men. Okay. Which was like a dystopian sci-fi-ish, you know, these guys would kick in your door and repossess your organs because like it was like about the whatever, like the commodification of healthcare and organ transplants and shit like that. I don't know. I mean, like
it was based there on a go. Book called The Repossession Mambo. Of course. Dope. It was
dope. I mean, like, that's literally the most predictable thing you could have told me tonight, that it would be based off of a book called The Repossession Mambo.
So you've never seen this movie, but you saw a parallel, though.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Why not?
Sure. Why not? Okay. All right.
What's your final piece?
Yeah, babe? So final piece. Like I said, this one's kind of just a ridiculous one, but I wanted to throw it in there anyway. It's for that final segment when they're going down level by level, and they're trying to force people to only take their fair share of the food, and they start getting to the point where they're actually just murdering people left and right, or like at least slamming them in the head with shit. And it reminded me of those levels in video games where you're on a platform and you're going down the platform, there's just oncoming waves of bad guys that you have to kill off. They did this in like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video game. They do it in Contra. They do it in a lot of different video games. I'm sure you know what what I'm talking about, where you have to just fight off wave after wave after wave of people. And there's usually something that you got to protect along the way. And so in this case, it's protecting the food.
There was a, I'm trying to remember the name of it, Burger Time on Nintendo.
Burger Time is not exactly the same thing, but I'll give it to
Burger,
you.
To be fair, Dave, Burger Time is exactly the same thing as this movie.
This is based on the video game Burger Time.
Do you remember Burger Time on Nintendo?
Yeah, like fucking A, I do.
Of course.
This is the weirdest episode of Peace. All right. I'm going to do the finished puzzle, then we'll get into some closing thoughts.
Dope.
Finished puzzle for the platform includes Snowpiercer, Saw, Phone Booth, The Lighthouse, The Machinist, Cube, They Live, Mother, Repo Men, Video Games, We Are Going Down a Platform, Fighting Off Lots of People, and of course, Burger Time. So, Q, you got any closing thoughts on this one?
I like this movie. Like I said earlier in the show, it was immensely satisfying. I felt like it was a lot of fun to watch. I love things that are oversimplifications for my own personal, very complex belief system. Uh-huh. Like my own way that I think about things, I think is inscrutable and indecipherable. To a lot of people,
smartest
and
guy I know.
Okay, and I like it when I see things where I can very easily be like, "Yes, yes, okay, this I agree with this. I indisputably pretty much agree with this."
Yeah,
and so I liked the movie a lot. I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know that it would be this good. It was very well done. I thought it would be one of those lower echelon Netflix shows that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Like one of those kind of crappier looking ones and not as well acted. That is a thing though. What, like you say, you were talking about how you get like kind of a better bang for your buck when you go overseas. Like in a place like Spain, you can get just probably incredible actors. People who are just such like craftsmen at what they do.
Yeah.
And make it for, you know, I mean like, you don't have to pay like, Peter Sarsgaard. You know, you don't have to pay Peter Sarsgaard money. You can get like a Peter Sarsgaard performance for like a tenth of that Peter Sarsgaard's.
What do you think his commanding rate is right now?
I don't know. Like $1 million a day or $1,000 a day? I don't know. Somewhere between those two. Somewhere in between $1,000 per day and $1 million per day is what Peter Sarsgaard demands on the open market.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I gotcha. But no, I agree with you, though. There's the central metaphor of this is pretty on the nose, but it does it in such a way that it's really entertaining to watch, and it's pretty clever, and I think everybody involved is doing really great work. I also wanted to shout out the music, which I thought was fantastic. I would butcher the guy's name, so I'm not even going to try. But it's a great movie. I'm really glad you brought this one to my attention. One last thing I wanted to bring up. The food in general in this movie is absolutely disgusting. I mean, it goes from amazing looking at the top and then just a couple floors down, it's the most disgusting thing in the world. But it also brought to mind something that we've talked about before, which is my whole weird like glitch in the matrix theory when I'm walking down a grocery store aisle and I see too much food and I think it's just not right. I think there's something like inhuman about it, like immoral and just weird and wrong. Yeah. And that's the same feeling I got when looking at that food and knowing it was just going to just get grosser and grosser and grosser as it went down that platform. And it was just, I don't know, I just thought it was pretty interesting how it captured that feeling.
Aranzazu Callejo.
Good. Thank you. Yeah, I've got his name up right Calleja. Here. So I think you did a good job. So thank you. That's the composer who did the great score for this movie.
Yeah, I never heard of the person before, but I wanted to just shout them out if you couldn't say their name right.
There you go.
they've never done anything that you've anything else that you've seen.
Yeah, it looks like all foreign language things that I've I haven't heard of any of these particular ones, but yeah, I think that about does it. Q, do you have another movie you saw recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners here at Piecing It Together?
Ooh, is this a new thing?
I don't think I was doing this last time, but we do this every time now.
Let me think. What have I seen lately? I had recently rewatched They Live, which is funny. No, but you know what? I'm going to give love to a TV show that is very cinematic. David Simon's new TV show, The Plot Against America, is really fucking good. It's really fucking good. It's again, we talk about dystopian futures, right? This is a dystopian past. This is one of those like rewritten past plots where what happens is FDR loses for his third term that he ran for in 1940. He loses to, instead of who the Republican nominee was back then, it was in this revision of the past, FDR loses to Charles Lindbergh, the famous pilot, the guy that, you know, also famously was a victim of, you know, kidnapping, but I think a lot of people forget to this day was a huge anti-Semite and a huge anti-Nazi interventionist. Like, he did not want to get the U.S. involved in World War II. Mm. And his position was tacitly, he would never come out and say this, but tacitly him and anti-Semites at the time, what they were saying was like, whatever, it's actually good that the Nazis are killing all the Jews. Mm. So what this TV show presupposes is he becomes president in 1940. And what kind of world arises from a Nazi sympathizing U.S. president who allows Hitler to run roughshod over, you know, Poland and Russia and London and France and, you know, doesn't care.
Right.
And it's done by David Simon, who created The Wire.
Right.
Which is the best, like bar none, the best TV show that's ever been made. And this show is right up there with that. It's really, really well done.
Awesome. What's that on? I haven't even heard of that.
HBO on Monday nights.
Right on. Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Well, sounds like a great recommendation. Q, where can people find you?
I don't know, man. I'm just here. I'm literally at my house all the fucking time. I never get out of here. I never go anywhere. Oh, it feels like
someone said
I've always been here, except that I have a longing that can only be explained by me having been somewhere else at one time in the past. And I don't know what to make of any of it. I'm just going to keep drinking.
Well, everybody listening at home, a little behind the scenes, smoking. We're about to record a Bird Road, and all I got to say is you should probably listen to that episode when it goes up, because I can only imagine what it's going to be like.
I can't even imagine what we're going to talk about. Am I slurring my words?
You are. You're going to have to. You're turned into Jewish Dave on this one.
Oh, it's me. It's going to be me.
Everyone, no matter how big a geek you are, has movies that they haven't seen that have other geeks saying, "How have you never seen this movie?" Well, we're here to help. At the Now You've Seen It podcast, we help you fill those gaps in your geek cred one movie at a time. Each episode, a guest who is watching the movie for the first time joins our rotating cast of hosts and panelists to discuss the movie and compare seeing it through fresh eyes versus seeing it with eyes filtered through the lens of nostalgia. You can find Now You've Seen It on Facebook at facebook.com/nowyouveseenit, no apostrophe, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Platform. Also, you should check out Now You've Seen It. I was just on it recently talking about John Carpenter's The Thing. It was a really fun conversation. Good show. Go check it out. And you should also check out Bird Road. You should also check out All Rice No Beans, and you should also check out Awesome Movie Year and check out Entre Dos. That's all the podcasts here on the All Points West podcast network that Q runs and I, of course, produce a bunch of shows on. And you should be listening to everything that we do. Lots of great stuff out there. So I do want to remind you, as always, if you enjoy Piecing It Together, we would love it if you would rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. Both would be amazing. 5 stars would be, you'd be the best. We'd love you so much. You could also, of course, sign up for our Patreon, where I have been posting a bunch of advanced episodes. There's a whole bunch of content there right now because we have so much in the can waiting to get put up on our main feed. So for now, it's just going to be on the Patreon. And you can check it out early. There's also going to be really soon a special album coming out. I just recently released a new regular album called Beater Original Motion Picture Soundtrack, and it's an hour and 45 minutes of music I've made for films, but there was stuff that I cut, and I'm going to be making a bonus album of some of the stuff that I cut, and that is going to go exclusively on the Patreon. So you should go check that out. And as always, we are always looking for more people to come join me here on Piecing It Together. So if you've been a long-time listener, first-time listener, whatever, get in touch. I'd love to have you sometime. So I think that does it for today. And I guess I'll leave you with a piece of music, as I always do. And I'm going to find a good track to go along with some of the themes from the platform, but I'm going to try to make it a track, as I've been doing for the last few weeks, from this new album, Beater. So I think, you know what would be a good one, because this is kind of a fucked up movie. It's kind of a fucked up episode. I hope you hung in there for this whole thing. But this is a track called One Way Out. It is from a really dark drama that is from director Chris Johnson. All the films that the music on Beater is, all the films were from director Chris Johnson. But this was the third film, I believe, that we worked on together, probably the darkest of them. It's about a cycle of abuse. And this track is the closing credits track from that film. So it's pretty melancholy, but I don't know if enjoy it is the right word, but enjoy this music. And if you like it, go check out the album Beater Original Motion Picture Soundtrack, which is available on iTunes and Spotify and all of the major digital music stores. So check it out, and we will be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon. Thank you.
and all points west.